The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Let's travel the world together. She can make it easy and in any kind of weather. No TSA, no bag checks, no patting down. She's talking from the skies and sending lots of feel-good sounds. Oh, Betty in the sky, have you heard her yet? She loves traveling, there's no doubt. Betty and the Jets. She's weird and wonderful. Oh, Betty, she's a podcast queen. She's wearing high heel shoes, got her wings on too. You know I've never seen a better stew.
Hello and welcome to Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. I'm Betty. I'm a flight attendant for a major airline, and I bring you stories from the airplane, from the flight attendants and the pilots, and from traveling around the world. In this episode, we have stories about dog bowls, lice, penguins, twister, broken carts, and an interview with a pilot who is building his own Fokker, his own World War I Fokker. Fascinating. Anyway, let's just go ahead and get right on with the show. So I was going through security, and you know the little white bowls that they have for you to put your loose change or your necklace or your bracelet or your wallet in at TSA? I always thought they look like dog bowls, and I just happened to look at the bottom of one the other day, and it actually had the tag on it, the sales tag, and it said top paws, paws as in dog paws. It actually really, they are actually dog bowls. The TSA purchased dog bowls for you to put your stuff in. I don't know why this tickles me, but I just am surprised that you know, they didn't have some other type of bowl, that they thought instead they would go for dog bowls for you to put your stuff in. And can you imagine the pet company, how thrilled they must have been when they got the order from the TSA for however many million dog bowls for all the airports across the country? So next time you're putting your stuff in one of those bowls, either turn it over and look and you'll see it says top paws, or just realize that you're putting your stuff in a dog bowl.
I wanna buy me an airplane. Go home and see my girl.
Okay, wait, so you mean that from the commercials, the Staples commercials, the button that says, that was easy?
That was easy.
Okay, so then what did you do with the that was easy button?
After landing, just after landing, I pressed the easy button and it went through the PA. And passengers thought it was the captain talking and making a comment about his good landing.
That was easy.
I'm so far away. Have to fly first class.
So I was just talking with this flight attendant, and she said they had this very uncomfortable situation to deal with. They were flying out of New York, and they had already pushed back, and they're doing the safety demonstration. It's a little plane, so they're doing it manually. And this woman rings her call bell, and she's sort of waving. And, you know, we can tell when it's nothing and when it's something important. And usually whenever there's hands waving, it means it's something important. It's not a, you know, I forgot, I didn't mean to push it, or can I have a blanket? So she goes over there, and the lady goes, she's pointing to the row in front of her. And she's like, there's bugs there's bugs all over her hair. And so the flight attendant looks, and sure enough, she had noticed this family getting on. She said they looked a little dirty. They were not being very nice to each other. She did notice them. You know, we notice everything. And she could see the bugs. I guess they were head lice in the young girl's hair. And, you know, that's a problem on the airplane, especially when you're full with people. And think of all the people that could get contaminated. So she goes to the pilot, and the pilot, they made the decision to go back to the gate to take the family off. And this is very uncomfortable, right? So he makes what he thinks is a really nice PA. He's like, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have to go back to the gate due to a health concern. So then they hear a call bell. And guess what? It was the call bell of the mother of the family that is having the bug problem. And she says, there's a health problem? Is it contagious? This woman is trying. You know, it's so hard when you're dealing with, you know, personal embarrassing situation not to laugh when the person who's having the health problem is asking, is it contagious? And so the agent comes on and tells the flight attendant to go deal with them and tell them they have to get off the plane. Well, you know, I certainly don't want to do that. And so she made the agent do it. But I just did think it was funny that of all the people on a full airplane, the one who rings their bell, who's indignant and wants to know, isn't contagious? It's the family that's having the bug problem. So I was commuting to work, and I was sitting next to a private jet pilot. They're always flying around because they have to meet the jet somewhere, and they're always going on like multiple day trips, and that sounds like a good job. Anyway, I was excited to talk to him, and I was planning on, recording some of the stuff he said, but I was sitting at the window, and he was sitting at the aisle, and we were having a nice chat, and then someone came in and sat in the middle. And then, you know, it just would seem rude to say, oh, excuse me, do you mind if I reach this microphone across you and talk to this pilot? But one of the things that he was saying is that he goes to some interesting places and countries. And he was saying some places in Russia, they have to pay for the gas in cash. This is not a long time ago. This isn't 20 years ago. This is now. Current modern day, these private pilots have to pay for their jet fuel in Russia in cash. You know, if you think of how much it costs to fill up your car, you can just imagine how much it costs to fill up a jet. So that's a heck of a lot of currency these pilots are just carrying around with them. Had to see my baby. You know, I can't believe I just had a penguin story. How can there be two penguin stories?
Easy. 727. We're in the middle of the aisle, pushing the beverage cart down along, and it's not a full flight. Passengers in the back are waving us down, and some other passenger needed assistance. It turns out his name was Gary. Gary shouldn't have been traveling alone. He should have been traveling with a companion.
Yes.
He wasn't, you know.
Wasn't all there.
Yeah. Very sweet man. Fully grown man, might we add. So he had to go to the bathroom, and he didn't know what to do. So I showed Gary to the lavatory in the back of the plane, and I locked the door, and I went back to the beverage cart. Not too long thereafter, there's banging on the door, and another passenger runs up to get me again. And he's like, something's wrong in there. Something's wrong in there. So I open the door. Here comes Gary. Here's the penguin part. Because his pants were at his feet.
It's like waddling.
His ankles. Yeah, he was doing the penguin with the willy wandering all around. So I had to pull his pants up. It's a dirty job. Somebody has to do it. That's true. That's my penguin story. I swear to you. I was traumatized. I had never seen a wiener up close like that before. Go home and see my girl.
So I did I did a domestic trip recently. I've mainly just been flying international, but I did a domestic trip and I ran into some of my friends that I used to fly with out of LA, and it was really fun. And I got to hear some stories that, you know, it's when you're in a smaller base, it just seems like there's a whole bunch more laughter because everybody knows each other. It's kind of, you know, working with friends. So he was saying on that flight they had just flown, he said they ran out of soap. There was no soap anywhere. We usually have, like a bag of extra bathroom supplies, and they didn't have soap. So they felt like there should be something in the bathroom that people could wash their hands with. So they decided to put little bottles of vodka in there. And actually we use the vodka. I just had to use vodka on my last flight because a guy threw up all over the place. And it's a really good disinfectant, you know, straight alcohol. It's better than Purell, especially I will wash my hands in vodka after dealing with cleaning up throw up. Very glamorous. Anyway, they decided to put little bottles of vodka in the bathroom because they didn't have soap. So he's working first class, and here's this lady, and she's going in the bathroom, and he's like, "Oh, miss, there's no, we don't have any soap, so there's some vodka in there for you." And she's like, "Oh no, I don't have any alcohol till 5. And he's like, he meant for her hands. He's just laughing, thinking, what kind of strange thinking would that be? We don't have soap, so here's some straight vodka for you to have a shot. Like, no soap, so go ahead and get drunk. He said that it just confused the passengers. He said he went in there one time, they were all gone, so someone just went in there and thought, ooh, free bathroom vodka. But the best one was the lady who was like, "Oh, no, I never drink before 5. So this comes from a listener named Lee from England. You know, I'm strangely popular in the UK. Not quite sure why, but I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled that I'm popular in England. Anyway, she said, a funny thing happened some years ago. We were on a flight to, I don't think I'm probably saying this right, but Alicante in Spain from England, and usually the captain comes on the speaker before we take off to introduce himself, etc. But this time he didn't. Anywho, at the end of the flight, the captain came on and said, "Hello, this is your captain. My name is Captain Crash." The plane erupted in laughter and everybody was clapping for Captain Crash. So this comes from a listener in West Sussex, UK. Again, not quite sure why the Brits, the Brits like my show. Maybe I can be an honorary Brit. Anyway, she says, when my daughter was 3 years old, we went on holiday to another place. I don't think I can pronounce Zaknios. As the plane was taking off, I asked her to pedal like Fred Flintstone to help the plane take off. So her little leg started, and soon enough, we were airborne, and she let out a resounding yahoo! Yeah, much to the amusement of many fellow passengers. So when we came to our approach some 4 hours later, she looked at me and said, "Should I help stop the plane like Fred Flintstone?" And I said, "Yes." So we were on final descent, and the ground was fast approaching. She looked out the window, and as soon as she sees the runway, she straightens her feet and makes a braking noise like car brakes and yells, just as we touch down, "We're going to crash!" There wasn't as much amusement at that. So far away, had to see my baby. Okay, so we hate when the passengers are always asking us for pens because lots of times they have a pen, but they just don't want to stand up to get their bag, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, so what do you do when they ask you for your pen?
I say, I have a pen, yes, but I'm sorry, I cannot lend it to you. That's the one I use to clean my ears.
Okay, this is something I find very strange. I spend a lot of time in the airport because I commute to and from work, so there's hours to be killed, so quite often I use an airport restroom while I'm in uniform. And it's the strangest thing. It's like people, other women in the restroom, have some expectation because I'm in uniform. Since, like, on the plane, we're always saying, you know, hello, goodbye, bye now, or thank you. Like, it's like they expect a greeting from me to everyone in the bathroom, which I counter would be very strange if I'm brushing my hair going, hello, goodbye, thank you, in the women's bathroom. When I'm supposed to be brushing my teeth going, hello, goodbye, thank you. But they actually seem disappointed when I don't greet them in the bathroom. I don't get this vibe or these looks at all as soon as I change my clothes. But when I'm in the uniform, I swear they want me to say hello, goodbye, and worst of all, thank you. So, you know, for cost-saving measures, the airlines keep making our galleys smaller and smaller, and there's still the same amount of passengers, and on international, the same amount of food service. So on a lot of the airplanes that I work on, there's 5 flight attendants working in a teeny tiny space. You have to be just really careful and really nice to each other because, and it's easy to get irritable because you just, can you imagine? It's the size of a galley kitchen, but you got 5 people in a hurry trying to serve. Think of, okay, the smallest apartment galley kitchen you can think of, okay? And then think that you're going to have to serve like 50 people a 5-course meal with 5 people in there. So I was joking that it's like playing Twister because you're always like trying to move your arm through their arm. Like, and not only is it like Twister, it's also kind of like Jenga, you know, the one where you have to like, you're stacking things on top of each other and, you know, pulling one thing out, but it all doesn't fall down. So basically, working in the galley in first class on some of these planes is like Jenga and Twister. And you just better hope that everybody stays in a good game playing mood.
Okay, it was when we first got the 767 about 10 years ago, and we were in Atlanta, and the plane broke. A little bitty thing broke on the plane. When it's a brand new plane, it takes forever to get FAA to clear it. So we were sitting there for 4 hours, and we were just had gotten the video systems, and one of the guys was playing the videos up front. One of the head honchos, big wigs, came on the plane to tour the 767.
So he came on to tour?
He came on to tour because nobody had seen it. You know, nobody had ever been on the plane before. So this one of the flight attendants, male flight attendant, he had his feet up on the bulkhead, and he was playing the video game. And the head honcho came on, and he goes, boy, get your feet off that bulkhead. We paid $1 million for this plane. And he turned around and he said, man, y'all got ripped off because I saw it on eBay last night for half of that. Turned right back around and started playing his video game. And the manager, the head honcho, he didn't know what to say. He just turned around and walked
off. Yeah, he's like, okay, that's that.
That's that.
All right, so I was on the beverage cart. And just like anything in the world, you know, things get old, things get broken. And when a beverage cart, which weighs a lot, I've heard different things, 250 pounds, 300 pounds. When that brake is broken, that thing is very difficult to move. And I was on the airplane and the brake wouldn't release. So, and it would release sometimes. So I literally would have to just shove it with all my weight to try to move it down the aisle, right? I'm on the cart by myself. And these passengers, nice, wanting to be helpful passengers, whenever they would see me going to shove it, they would all stick their heads into the aisle, like to see if there was something blocking it. And I'd be going, no, don't put your heads in the aisle as I'm pushing this thing that I don't know if it's going to let go or not, because your heads are very valuable. And the whole way down the aisle, I'm like, trying to push this beverage cart. And each time these people would stick their heads in the aisle, and I'd have to say, please, please don't put your heads in the aisle because my cart is broken and I have to push it. And I don't know if it's going to go easily or not. So you put your heads in the aisle. And I'm trying to explain this, and, you know, it's just too difficult a thing to process. I don't know, because every time I'd go to push it, there would go all the heads. It's just a miracle that I didn't really hurt someone that day. So I got an email from a listener about something I've known about for a while, and I actually did contemplate doing it just because I can always use a little extra money, and I like to make money, sure, but I don't know, it's just a little, weird. You can actually sell used flight attendant shoes, used cabin crew shoes on eBay. There is a market for them. They will buy your worn out, ugly shoes. And, you know, there's a part of me that thinks, great, you know, I'm just going to donate them or give them away or throw them away. I'd love to make money from them, but I don't know. It's just, I'm sorry. It's just a little creepy.
Okay, so I'm on this trip to Singapore with our mutual friend, Jose. You know, real good-looking Jose that always looks perfect.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're walking around Singapore, and it's steamy, steamy hot. And, you know, perfect Jose barely has a little bit of sweat on his forehead. And me, on the other hand, I'm just dripping. It's soaked all through my shirt. And you know, we've gone, gotten something to eat. We went to the botanical gardens. And the thing that Jose wanted to do the most was go to the Marina Bay Sands Hotel. It's three skyscrapers with like a spaceship on top. Ooh. And with this huge infinity pool with a beautiful view of all of Singapore, and a club up there called Coup d'Etat. And you can, you know, go access this club and enjoy the view of Singapore. We get up there, and I'm, by the time I walk in, I'm really uncomfortable because I'm so hot. And, you know, it's a real stylish club, and the music is great. It's all beautiful people there. And so we get a table, and I excuse myself to
freshen up,
the restroom, and just kind of splash some water on my face and try to cool off. And so the restroom's downstairs. I splash water on my face. I go looking for hand towels. There's no hand towels. All they have are those hot air things. Well, I would
right.
get under one of those covers. They don't really use those in Asia.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay, third option, TP. So I roll up a bunch of TP and I wipe myself off, dry myself off, and I'm thinking, okay, all right, I can go back up now. I go upstairs and the music's pumping and it's real, real cool vibe going on there. I walk into the club and I'm walking through, going back towards our table, and I notice I'm getting checked out. Yeah, this is pretty cool.
Woo-hoo.
And I see this beautiful woman across, and she kind of points at me, and I'm like, yeah, I still got it going on. Yeah, I'm about to get my groove on. Yeah. So I get up to the table, and Jose looks up at me and says, you have toilet paper all over your face.
I was wondering if toilet paper was the best idea.
Yeah. So what I learned from this is don't try to be cool, because I'm not cool. And any time I try to be, I end up being a complete fool of myself.
I'm gonna buy me an airplane, go home and see my girl.
So I was excited because I got a letter from England, a check from Amazon. It's the first, you know, I ask you guys if you're going to buy something on Amazon, if you'll click through my site, I get a little percentage, you know, it helps support the show. And I don't know how many months ago someone asked, well, why don't you put some international links, you know, like to Amazon UK or Amazon in Germany, because people in other countries listen to the show. So I did, and you know, you don't get a check or you don't get compensated until you hit a certain amount. So I finally hit £50. So I got a check for £50, and I was excited. I was like, I got a check from England. So I just go to my credit union, thinking I'll just deposit it or cash it. And I guess I never really thought about getting a check in a foreign currency, because they said you can't cash it or deposit it. It has to be at least $250. And I'm thinking, well, you know, this is worth like $75, $80. What do I do with it? And they're like, I don't know, maybe take it to the bank it came from. I'm like, in England? I'm like, well, what would, I mean, I work for an airline. So, you know, I actually can go to England, but most people are not going to fly to England to cash a $75 check. So I don't know actually what a normal person would do if they got this check, but I got a trip to London and I went to a regular bank first and just to see if I could cash this check in pounds. And they were like, no. And I said, well, what if I go to this bank? It said Deutsche Bank. And I looked up on the internet, I would need to take like two tube stops to get to this bank. And they were like, I don't think that bank will cash it any either. And I'm like, well, it came from that bank. And they're like, I don't think they're going to cash that. But you can go to a check cashing place. And they told me where one was. So I went to a check cashing place and they said, well, this check is over a month old. And I was like, well, I had to get to England. I live in the United States. I didn't realize there was a time frame. So I went to another check cashing place and they actually cashed it. They charged a fee, but that was all right. But I had to fill out forms. I had to take pictures. They had to write down what hotel I was staying at, references, email addresses. But at least I now know that I can cash a check in foreign currency in the country it came from. At a check cashing place. So thank you very much, people in England. I really do appreciate the Amazon clicks. And now I know, so I won't be confounded as to what to do with the check in foreign currency. So thank you very much for going to my website when you're gonna buy something on Amazon and spread the love. Thanks. This very interesting. You just said what you were doing on your layover, which I've never heard anybody say before. What did you do on your layover?
Well, I went to a museum to see a real example of the three-quarter scale airplane that I'm building, which is a Fokker Eindecker from World War I.
But see, this is what I find fascinating. You're building a Fokker.
Yes, it's a kit plane actually. There's a guy that makes them out in Missouri. It's called Airdrome Aeroplanes, and he does Fokkers, Sopwith Camels, all kinds of World War I airplanes, about 20 of them, actually.
Okay, but who's going to check it out, like, to make sure it's if you're making it out of a kit, how are you going to know that it's actually done correctly?
Well, that's pretty much going to be up to me, because at this point, the FAA doesn't require what used to be required is a no-skin inspection by the FAA. Now they don't require that anymore, so it's going to be basically me and a mechanic friend of mine that's going to come by and check it out every once in a while.
Another question. Can you explain when you say a no skin?
Prior to covering the airplane with fabric, which is what it's going to be covered. So.
And it's going to be covered in fabric?
Yes, like a Dacron. And they still cover airplanes that way, not just replicas and home builds. But if you buy like a Waco or a J3 Cub that are built these days, they're still fabric cover.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, I got more questions because I have never ever run into someone who was building a Fokker before. No, really, like what can just like a normal person, because you're obviously a pilot, but can a normal person build one of these kits and actually build a Fokker?
Yeah, it's not easy, but I will say that there's a chat group online,
right?
that I went through 21,000 chats to see what I could get out of it. And, you know, a lot of them are just nothing, but I did get a lot of information out of these chats. Also, the guy that sells the kits is really good as far as answering his phone. If you have a question, just call him up and answer. He'll answer the phone. There's no secretary. It's actually him.
Okay, because I'm talking from people like myself who don't know much about airplanes. How much does an airplane, a kit that will actually make an airplane cost?
They range, this particular company ranges from around $6,000 to up to $15,000, I think, is what they're...
But that does not seem like a lot of money for an airplane.
Well, now, that includes the metal and the hardware to create the airframe. It does not include the engine or the instruments. And there's going to be some other hardware and things that you're going to have to pick up.
And how can you give a guesstimate of how much time you'll probably put into making this airplane?
Well, he advertises for this airplane about 400 man hours, which I'm assuming that means you know what you're doing, which I don't.
Right.
So I'm figuring it's going to be either triple or maybe four times that for me. Just, I sit around thinking about how to do things. When if I had the right tool, I'd be able to do it right now, immediately.
Right.
So I don't have all the right tools yet either.
And so, when you first take it up, will you be taking it up by yourself?
As a one-seater.
It's a one-seater?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I would take anybody up anyway. They recommend that you have somebody test fly it for you. That's
right.
Experienced with this kind of. See, I don't have much experience with the small tail drag.
Okay, I got one more.
So you're just doing this with a Swiss Army knife, right? Yeah. And a rabbit's foot.
Yeah.
Well, to me, it kind of seems like it's like an airplane, like, you know, you put together furniture at IKEA.
Well, it really kind of is. It's not that complicated. It's basically aluminum tubes, and they are held together with what's called a gusset. And a gusset is just a sheet metal, maybe a circular piece of sheet metal or triangular sheet metal that you place over these tubes after you lay them on the table, and then you rivet.
You're putting it together with rivets.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, pop rivets or blind rivets, if you want to be more technical. And so if you use the rivets you'd use on a jet, it would take two people, and it's very difficult. These are much easier to do.
Okay, I got one more thing. Now, what made you pick that particular aircraft type to build and own?
You mean like as opposed to something with a canopy on it?
Or something.
Well, one, I'm cheap. Two, the size of the thing, it's a 3/4 scale of the real one. So it's not, you know, it's going to have about a 23-foot wingspan.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where will you put it?
Exactly. That's one of the reasons I got the small one. If I was to make one of the biplanes, this has one wing, the Eindecker. Eindecker means one level in German. And if I was to make a triplane, I'd have to make three sets of wings, where
right.
In this case, I only need to make one set of wings. Where I'm going to put it?
Yeah.
I'm not there yet. I came upon all these things that were issues, like where am I going to put it, and am I going to insure it, and all these other things. And when it all came together like that, I decided not to do it. And then I was walking around mad for a couple days, and I finally said, you know, I'm not going to worry about these things right now. I'm going to take it one step at a time, and I've never had more fun than...
Like, you're going to take it like, what the fucker?
That's right. That's right. And so I'm having a blast not knowing where I'm going to put it. It will happen.
Yeah.
It'll all come together when it has to.
And how many people can say that they've built one?
There are 70 of them flying that I know, roughly 70 of his kits flying, and probably he's sold in the neighborhood of 500 of them.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Over the last 25 years, which he stumbled onto the business. He decided to build himself a Fokker. And everybody wanted to know where he got it. He said, I built it. So then he started building kits, and that turned into his life's work.
I know, it's just amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I love to hear, people's stories. I mean, as soon as you said that you were building a Fokker, I just had to know.
Well, you know, what's funny is I just happened to have my phone out. I was actually going to show you the another app. And then when I turned it on, the Fokker came up, of course, because that's on my wallpaper. I just had to show you for whatever reason.
Okay, so I was going to work, 8 o'clock in the morning. Now, granted, I live at the beach, so there aren't as many flight attendants as, say, in like a city like New York or Chicago, where there's a whole bunch of flight attendants that live and work there. So I'm going out to my car in my uniform, with my ID and my heels. My airline uniform, my suitcase, carry-on bag, there's, it's very obvious what I am and what I do. So this guy stops me and he goes, I'm guessing that you're a flight attendant. And I was kind of like, yes, I am. And then he just gave me a strange look, and I went ahead and got in my car, and I was thinking, what was your first clue, mister? Was it the airline ID, the wings, the uniform, the high heels, or the suitcase? But I'm guessing you are a flight attendant. Well, that's about it for this episode of Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. I hope you'll join me again next time so we can travel the world together. Thanks. Bye. I'm on a bye.
First class. That was easy.
This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change, offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead, so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.